The historic Kansas City Foundation is out with its latest list of most endangered buildings, and you will recognize a bunch of these buildings. They include Walt Disney's Laugh-O-Gram Studio over on 31st Street, the closed school buildings in the Kansas City, Missouri School District, and the Lane Blueprint Building and the Wheatley Provident Hospital. The foundation is the only nonprofit in the area dedicated to preserving historic buildings. And with us today to talk about historic preservation are Amanda Crawley. She's Executive Director of Historic Kansas City Foundation. And Amanda, nice to have you.
Thank you for having us.
And Walter Guth is also here. He's a board member and a realtor. And Walter, nice to have you too.
Thank you, Steve.
Good morning. Well, Amanda, how does your group determine, you know, which buildings manage to get on this list?
Sure. Well, obviously, we've sort of got our pulse on preservation in Kansas City. And so we had board members contribute. We took nominations from the public. And there was just sort of a selection process in terms of, you know, which ones really are the most endangered.
How actively involved does the public get in picking these buildings?
We had a post on Facebook and got quite a few nominations, also through our website. And so I'd say about a third of the buildings, especially on our watch list, sort of came from public nominations.
Hmm. And Walter, how does a building qualify for a list like this? What does it take to get a building on the list?
I think it has to have some significance. It has to have public attention, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be endangered to be actually on the endangered list. So a threat of demolition, imminent demolition, or known just the possibility that it's going to be demolished within the next year.
So evil has to be lurking out on the horizon somewhere to get these buildings.
I guess you could say it that way. Yeah.
Okay. And once it's on the list, Amanda, what does that mean? Does something happen then?
Well, I think that especially for our most, we have sort of divided our list this year into most endangered and our watch list. And so especially for the most endangered buildings, you know, the Historic Kansas City Foundation will take sort of a special interest in them and particularly work with owners, potential redevelopers to sort of work towards a positive outcome for these buildings. So I think it's just sort of a way for us to sort of internally prioritize our efforts a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And do you all have money to work with to help save these buildings?
Not necessarily. That would be sort of not typical, not to say that that wouldn't happen, but we, you know, try and meet with the building owners and talk about possibilities besides demolition, sort of see what the best outcome would be aside from just the wrecking ball.
Hey, how do those conversations go, Walter, when you guys sit down with a building owner who says, I simply can't afford to keep this building up anymore, I need to make some money off of it, and you all say what then?
That is probably the most typical thing is economic hardship on it. So what we try to bring to it is resources. One would be local or national registry, if that is available to it, which can bring and certainly has brought tax dollars mm-hmm. available to help with defray the cost of rehabilitation.
Are you referring to those historic preservation tax credits that are so, I guess, controversial in some ways?
Always
in
question.
City?
Always in question. However, yeah. Missouri has been the leader in the nation for doing the historic tax credits.
Yeah, well, you know, Missouri doesn't lead the nation in any category.
Except
this one.
Yeah.
Why is this such a priority for lawmakers that this is vaulted to the top of the to-do list in Jefferson City?
Well, because a lot of the ethic of historic preservation is going to come out of St. Louis and Kansas City, and it's not going to be so much in the rural areas. So mm-hmm. it's a continued fight between the city and the agricultural.
So again, Walter, if this building gets on the list, then you can tell the building owner that, hey, you can potentially save a whole lot of money here if you preserve this building. There's tax credits available to help you do that, right?
Right, right.
And what kind of percentage of the work is available to be covered, do you think?
25% national?
Right now, if the program stays the way it currently is, you can couple the federal historic tax credits with the state historic tax credits.
Wow.
And so when you couple the 25% state and the 20% federal, that ultimately adds up to about 45% of your total rehab costs. So for certain buildings that are eligible for that type of program, and not necessarily all of them are, there are sort of some restrictions in terms of minimum investment and rehab cost, and it has to be an income-producing property. It's some sort of more technical issues that would make a building qualify. But if your building is a good option for this program, it really does help sort of with the rehab. Schools are a great example of how that historic tax credits can be used. Also, some of the larger midtown apartment buildings are great options for that. Probably less so individual houses, but there still might be some funds available for that type of thing.
Why less so individual houses? Just because they're not public buildings? And
It's harder to meet the threshold for minimum investment required. Also, typically for houses, it has to qualify for the historic tax credit program. It has to be an income-producing property, so it's more likely that an individual house owner would probably live in a house. But that's not to say that there aren't tax credits available, because there is a special program specifically for houses. So that is also available, but it's not that 45%.
So if there's an old abandoned church downtown that's a really neat building, we did a show on some of these buildings not very long ago, mm-hmm. you're saying it wouldn't qualify for historic preservation status because it's empty, it's not producing any revenue, so you just can't wave a magic wand and save that building necessarily.
Well, no, absolutely you can. I mean, for a large church, basically the process would be to get it listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and that's sort of the first threshold in order to qualify for historic tax credits. And so once that's done, then you come up with your rehab design, sort of what you want to do with the building, and start working with the State Historic Preservation Office on seeing that design sort of is in keeping with their standards.
And they have to sign off on
yes,
it then.
Yes, they do.
But boy, the 45% potential mm-hmm. incentive here, that is really
That's
pretty
huge.
Breathtaking.
It's very yeah. significant.
And how many buildings, do you guys keep track of how many buildings have been rehabbed in Kansas City under these programs? Is there a list out there?
That's a great question. I don't think that I have a list. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's... I know of a lot of them off the top of my head that you drive through the city and you just sort of know that's what happened. But we do not have a comprehensive list. But the State Historic Preservation Office would have a comprehensive list.
There you go. We're talking about historic buildings in Kansas City and how to save them with members of the Historic Kansas City Foundation. You know, Walter, build a case here. I mean, why preserve these old buildings? Why is that so important? Because, you know, a lot of folks say, hey, times change. These are old buildings. Let's move on.
You know, we need to touch. When we want to relate to history, we need to touch it. When I was a child, I was raised overseas. I came back in fourth grade to Tidewater, Virginia, and saw Jamestown, Williamsburg, and Yorktown for the first time. I had absolutely no basis for understanding American history.
Mm-hmm.
But I was so fascinated by what I could see and touch and experience that today I'm still a lover of colonial history in America.
Well, that's a pretty good sell. Amanda, what would you add to that?
I mean, my interest in buildings, I think, comes from the stories that they tell. And I would echo what Walter said about how it's something from history that you can touch and feel. And I think that's important to sort of relay our, you know, contemporary times to that of our forefathers.
Yeah. Well, if our listeners have questions about buildings they've noticed and wondering what status they might fall under in terms of preserving them down the road, you can give us a call right now. We have a couple of experts here in the studio. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, up to date at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us at KCUR up to date. What does the Historic Kansas City Foundation do exactly? You're a nonprofit. What do you do, Amanda?
Well, yeah, we're a nonprofit dedicated to advocacy and education about the city's historic buildings, resources, and neighborhoods. And so we try and affect public policy and make sure that there are good public policy decisions and initiatives that would promote preservation. We also do education and outreach to the community, and we have some special programs dedicated to that as well.
You know, given all these programs, I'm wondering, are you fighting, you know, a losing battle in the sense that there are always more buildings coming on the list than you can possibly get to? Or is the fact that Missouri's historic preservation program is so robust, is that helping you keep up with what you got to keep up with?
Well, I mean, I guess I would mention that the historic tax credit program every year in the Missouri sort of comes on the chopping block. So making sure that stays instated is certainly very important.
So but you lobby down there then?
We have been involved in the past in lobbying for that program, yes.
Yeah.
I guess I'd also say, you know, we understand we can't win everything, but, you know, we do our best and it's always worth a fight because you never know, you know, exactly what the possibilities are. And I think that the Cosby Hotel, which was a real success for the Historic Kansas City Foundation recently, is a good example. You know, that's the old hotel at 9th and Baltimore that many, about a year and a half ago, was sort of had a date with the wrecking ball.
Yes.
Many buyers went through, said it can't work, it's too far gone. They actually even took out some of the original elements for architectural salvage. And lo and behold, the right buyer with the right vision comes along and makes it happen. And so I think the lesson is that, you know, there are very few lost causes. If you sort of get the right elements in place, that a lot can happen.
So even with that project, you weren't convinced yourself that it couldn't be saved?
I always think there's a way. There's a way. And we were lucky enough through our efforts with the city to sort of convince them to not invest in its demolition, but rather invest in its preservation. And so we were able to hold off on the demolition. And a buyer who is very qualified and a good developer came in, and they've got a really good rehabilitation project underway.
That's a great story. Great story. Let's go to some phone calls here. Mike from Olathe. Mike, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
You know, I just had a comment on why to save these things. I'm married to a Danish national, and we were married overseas in a church that dates back to 1298.
Wow.
And, you know, just to be in that church at that time, and, you know, and you can read about history, but when you can experience and just feel it, and, you know, and how many came before us. You know, and I mean, I've sat on benches, you know, that are made out of stone that are concave to your rear end, you know, from billions of people sitting on them over hundreds of years. And if you can't experience that, you know, you can't get as close to it.
Mike, you're a good pitch man. You made a great case. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye. You're
welcome. Thank you.
You know, one of the endangered species on your list, Amanda, this time around, it was interesting to me. It's the city's historic preservation program itself. Mm-hmm. This program is separate from what you do. It's on, you say the city program is simply what, overwhelmed here?
Well, you know, obviously the city is going through budget cuts. And right now we do feel like that program is sort of understaffed and that they could use more support from the city to really make sure that our historic resources are adequately attended to, and also that they're able to complete the surveys that are outlined in the Focus Kansas City plan.
So they have more work than they can get to.
I would say so, and I also think, you know, we also have the long-range planning program on that list, that there might be some restructuring at City Hall related to the budget cuts, but also just how departments are looked at. And so we're also interested in making sure, because that long-range planning is very important to the work that we try and do in preservation, that we've got a solid program at the city that can sort of be functional and work with us in that way.
And Walter, your pitch to the city would be, how important is it to keep up with their historic preservation program?
Oh, great question. It would be. It's critically important.
Yeah.
It was the Focus plan was created with the city, but it was also 1,500 residents and stakeholders in Kansas City who got together to create this program, which is a long-term program. It had national recognition. And unfortunately, our city council doesn't have the institutional memory to understand it and utilize it to its maximum benefit. So we have to become, in a sense, a watchdog organization to the city council to say, hey, read it, will you? And not only read it, but abide by it. So
we're going to go through a list of some of these buildings in just a second. But Amanda, tell us some of the other success stories in recent years. You mentioned the hotel downtown. What else would you point to that people might recognize as you?
Yeah, about 10 years ago, the Park Lane building was sort of up for demolition, I guess. It was for a high-rise building.
And where is that again? Remind us.
That's on, let's see, it's
Mill Creek
facing
Boulevard.
Mill Creek. Okay, yeah.
Mill Creek Park, sure.
Yeah. Right behind sort of the retail part of the plaza. And so that was a success from about 10 years ago. We also were instrumentally involved in the redesign of the Seasons 52 building that a lot of people remember from recent memory. It was just this past late summer and fall. And, you know, there was sort of a not very good contemporary design proposed for one of the sort of a central building on the plaza. And so we were instrumental in, you know, getting that sort of change to be more in keeping with the original architecture.
Okay, let's go to a couple phone calls here. Let's go to Joe from Kansas City, Missouri. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. I'd just like to express that preservation of historic buildings allow us to tell stories of the past. And for an example, the Wheatley Hospital tells a story of when African Americans could not get service at the white hospitals. Doctors could not practice at the white hospitals. It also tells the story of the efforts of African Americans to maintain a hospital. I think one of the success stories of historic preservation in Kansas City is the 18th and Vine Historic District and such structures as the Gym Theater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good phone call, Joe. I'm glad you made it. And the hospital is on your list this year, right, Amanda?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to Carolyn from Olathe. Carolyn, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions. My first question is there a reason why the Disney Corporation is not involved, or are they involved, in preserving the Disney Workshop on 31st Street? And I want to know what the status is of the school building that's on 18th and I think that's Woodland. I'm not sure, down in the Jazz District.
Okay. Carolyn, thank you very much. We'll try and get some answers here. Why isn't the Disney Corporation involved, or is it involved?
Well, they have been in the past, and I cannot speak specifically to whether they are currently involved, but I know that they have been supportive of the past.
They should be, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would think
so.
You'd
think so, yeah.
But, you know, there's a functioning nonprofit right now called Thank You Walt Disney that's been around for about 15 years, and they have been working on this building where Walt Disney had his first office in Kansas City and where he had the inspiration to create Mickey Mouse. They've been working on this building and getting it stabilized and hopefully up and running as a functioning historic site for about 10 years. And so they have in the past worked with the Disney Corporation on that.
Our caller also asked about the school building at 18th and Woodlawn.
I'm
wondering if she's thinking of Lincoln Prep. Is it about 22nd?
Yeah, I should have kept her. I let her go, and I'm sorry about that. Okay. Let's grab one more phone call before a break here. Greg from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Yeah. Thank you, Steve. I've got a question on there's a building. It's a great old building at Linwood and Gillum, 3200 Gillum Road. It's called it was the historic, built as the Acme Cleaners company building.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great location. It's a neat brick and terracotta building. And every time I say Acme Cleaners, I'm always reminded of like a previous story talk, person talking about Disney. You always think of the cartoons, Acme Cleaners.
Right.
Fritz Freleg and Walt Disney, and there's another cartoonist that came out of Kansas City, and I always wondered if that wasn't sort of an inspiration for some of their in their cartoons.
Right. Well, let me ask, Greg, what do we think?
Not sure about that, but that building actually is on our watch list year. Yeah, it was also known as the Luzier Cosmetics building. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our very good conversation here about preserving historic buildings in Kansas City. We'll talk about the Snower House, the Donaldson House, and the plaza itself, as well as the Savoy Hotel and Grill. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, the latest art, independent, foreign, and documentary films now showing. We're talking this hour about historic buildings in Kansas City with two members from Historic Kansas City Foundation, Amanda Crawley. She's the executive director, and Walter Guth, who's a board member and a realtor. Let's go through some of these buildings that are on your list this time around. You come out with a new one every year. The first one is the Lane Blueprint Building. Where is that one, Walter?
That's 1540 Main, I think, 1520 Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really the only remaining two-story building on that street. Everything else is parking lot or one-story building.
Is that right across the street from Isla Davis Park? Am I thinking?
No. Okay. This is just south of...
South of there. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And what's significant about this building besides that?
Its age, mm-hmm. 1889. It is a limestone facade over a brick structure. So it's architecturally unique for Kansas City and the Crossroads area. So it's really representative of what was being built there as Kansas City expanded south.
Amanda, why don't you tell us about Donaldson House?
Sure. The Donaldson House is at 4347 Oak. It's been owned by the Kansas City Art Institute since the late 60s.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And they used it for a while as classrooms and studios and storage. And, you know, in I guess the past 15 years, it's been vacant, and there have been sort of discussions about whether they need to tear it down to build dorms for their students, and what sort of possibly could happen with this house. And so its fate is sort of uncertain. They have applied for a demolition permit, and they were denied by the Kansas City Landmarks Commission. But they are currently in the holding period. After they got their denial, you have to wait 18 months. And so in May, they will be able to proceed with demolition. We are currently sort of talking to them and working with another feasible alternative besides demolition, which might be moving the house from the lot. Now, wow. When we talk, and they're willing to give the house for a dollar for somebody who can physically move it from the lot. There would certainly be challenges with that. You know, the house is not structurally maybe in the best shape. And wow. So there's a significant amount of investment that would need to be done there. And of course, it's not always cheap to move a house, but there are some, you know, some vacant lots in that area that would keep it within the South Moreland Historic District. If you sort of get, you know, the right buyer with the right vision who could sort of see that happen, that is a possibility.
But if they moved it, you'd be holding your breath, I gather.
Well, I've seen a lot of really large houses moved, and I don't know how they do it, but they do it.
They do it, yeah. We have an email here from Chuck, who writes us this. The lady who had called about the school in the 18th and Vine area was referring to the Attic School at 18th and Woodland. Yep. There, that ring a bell. And Bonnie in Leavenworth writes us this. I agree on the impact of historic buildings. As a child, I thought American colonial history was really boring until I moved to Virginia. Now I live in a historic home in Leavenworth, and I'm all about Kansas history. And Gabby from Kansas City, Missouri writes us this. Do your guests have any recommendations for books about historic buildings in Kansas City and Kansas City history in general?
Well, there are a couple of books that have come out recently, just this past year, that are worth looking at. One's the story of Elmwood Cemetery, and they've got a lot of really good, great pictures and stories.
I have that book.
It's a good book, isn't it?
You're talking about it, yeah.
Another one, Pendleton Heights Neighborhood Association put together a book looking at Pendleton Heights then and now, sort of, I think, a takeoff on the general the Kansas City books that are also the then and now. I think there are two or three in that series, and those are also really good books. You know, those then and now books really make the case for preservation, because you can see visually what was and what there is now. You almost don't need any words.
The Star publishes those books, and they've been very popular, Walter. Yeah.
There is a book that is out of print. It was written by Jane Flynn and Dory DeAngelo.
Oh, Jane Flynn, sure.
Oh, yeah, about the lost architecture of Kansas City.
Hmm.
And that one is an incredible wealth of information about what used to be. That's how I first learned about Millionaire's Row in Kansas City and where it was.
Hmm. Where was it?
26th to 30th Street on Troost.
Really?
Yeah. It's all gone.
All those houses are long gone.
25% of the millionaires in Kansas City in 1890 lived in that four-block area. It's all gone.
Back to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888. Let's go to Kathleen from Lawrence. Kathleen, good morning.
Hi. I have a question for your guest concerning the Jack-O-Lantern Ballroom. I wonder if you're familiar with that building. It's at 39th and Main, but it's kind of tucked away. And about 20 years ago, it was the home of the School of the Westport Ballet. And I just wondered if you knew what was going on with that building now.
The Jack-O-Lantern Ballroom. I've never heard of it.
Yeah. I've heard of it.
It's a beautiful place.
Yeah, I have heard it's a special place. But unfortunately, I don't have any details off the top of my head about currently what's going on there.
Okay. Well, I encourage, if you ever have a chance to see it, it's a beautiful oval-shaped room with lots of ornate plaster and very high ceilings, about two stories high in the main part, and huge huge multi-paned windows with that open up, and it's just very light-filled and very, very beautiful and ornate. And it was a wonderful place to take ballet lessons. But unfortunately, the church that owned that building, they went through some changes, and the school, the Westport Ballet, couldn't stay there. But that was about 20 years ago.
And Kathleen, that's at 39th and Main, you said?
Yes, it's kind of tucked back. If you're coming on Westport Road toward Main, it's to the left. I think there's a CVS pharmacy across the street
but
it's kind of tucked away because buildings have been put up along Main Street there, but if you look for it, you can see the curved shape. It's a brick building, and you can see the curved outline of it among what's been built up there. And it is an incredible building. It's very beautiful.
Well, what a great phone call. I'll take a look for it next time I drive through there, Kathleen. That's a great idea.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah, you bet. What else is on our list here? The Snower House. Who wants to talk about that? Yeah.
I will. I actually grew up just about two blocks from the Snower House, and so I know at least the outside of it very well. It's a Marcel Breuer designed house, who's a very notable and influential modernist architect. It was built in the 1950s. It's at 67th and Belender, sort of a small boxy house that's sort of doesn't face the street face on. It faces the street at an angle, and the original owners who actually commissioned the house still live in the house.
Wow.
And the reason that the Snower House is on our – it's actually on our watch list, not quite the most endangered list. But the reason is because there's sort of this pattern in Mission Hills right now. There are a lot of teardowns happening. Because the value of the lots are so high, people come in and they want to build their dream house. Some people call them McMansions. And so this house is definitely threatened, I think, over the next couple of years, depending on, you know, who might – you know, be interested in buying it in terms of being demolished for a nice big new house.
So you've heard that it may be the
no,
status
it's not.
Of the home. No, go ahead.
It's not currently for sale, but and it's on our watch list just because I think it's representative of a potential problem and threatened sort of for the future.
I gotcha. Well, Walter Guth, one other place listed on this list is the Savoy Hotel and Grill. It was on last year's list, too. Why is it back again this year?
In December this last year, the TIF Commission took away the TIF for it.
Ah.
And that's just because economic development has kind of gotten slow, and nothing has happened with the Savoy. I think it was almost 10 years ago that the TIF was okayed for that. So that really, the fact that the TIF is no longer right there for the redevelopment of it or the renovation of it really puts it on the endangered list.
And it's still obviously being used every day.
It is. And it is. And it's the oldest hotel in continuous use in Kansas, well, west of the Mississippi.
And Harry Truman famously had a booth in there, right?
Absolutely. Booth number four.
You can go in there and see it.
Yep. Absolutely.
Even today.
Yeah, four presidents have eaten there.
Okay. Yeah. And what about the status of Kansas City Public Schools, Amanda? What's happening there?
Sure. Well, I mean, I know that they're doing their best to sort of find good and qualified redevelopers for some of these sites.
And are they?
Going through. That's a good question. That would be a question, you know, for Shannon Jacks, who's in charge of the repurposing. And I actually have a meeting set up with her in the coming weeks, and where I'll get a lot more updates on that.
Yeah, okay. Well, again, we have the historic Kansas City Foundation's most endangered list and photos of the buildings we've been talking about today on our website at kcur.org. Well, hey, thanks for the update. Sure glad you both came in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Amanda Crawley. She's executive director of the historic Kansas City Foundation, and Walter Guth, who's a board member and realtor.